Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by conservative John McGovern, liberal Salim Muakil, Art Sear of Carthage College, and Barbara Iverson of Columbia College. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base on State Street, that great street in Chicago, where our phone lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. And a little bit later on in the program, we are going to be giving you the brand new website for Beyond the Beltway. And if you want to participate by giving us an email, we'll do that. And also, we're going to be talking with our director, who's going to check some of the lighting. We're having a lighting problem. The lighting looks great, probably, if you're listening to the show on the radio. But if you're watching this show on television, we're going to flip the lights on in just a matter of seconds. I would like to begin with a piece of breaking news. As you know, we've spent a lot of time over the last couple of months, as have many in the media, talking about the Veep stakes for the Republicans and Democrats. And we do have a break tonight. We can report tonight for the Democratic nomination for vice president. It will not be John Edwards. It's not going to be John Edwards, even though John McGovern, who is our Republican tonight, has got a smile on his face.
Well, I mean, if
this is a good story for you folks.
I think
couple of weeks to go to the convention, this will maybe push Larry Craig out of the out of the discussion.
Wait, talk about old news, Bruce. Come on. I don't see why John Edwards still can't be considered a candidate. I would encourage the Democrats to take a strong look at him. I think he'd certainly bring something interesting to the ticket.
Barbara Iverson from Columbia College, one of the things that you do, you teach new media. So this story has evolved, is this another example of the mainstream media missing a significant story that the American people should have known about had the mainstream media been doing its job?
There's quite a discussion around that. Some of the people I saw said it was important that the mainstream media really vet the story and make sure they get the sources. But on the other hand, the Inquirer had it right. And, why would the
Inquirer... As they have many times in the past.
Yes, they may have better researchers because they get sued more, but...
Art Sear is of Carthage College. We're going to talk about your area of expertise, international affairs, in a moment. But again... you're an American voter. I mean, this is one of these seedy stories you don't like to talk about. But again, is this an example, again, as I said to Barbara, that the mainstream media really missed this story? And this was a story the American people should have known about.
I guess that's right. The mainstream media does have to be cautious nowadays. At the same time, gossip becomes news. So it sort of breaks two ways. In this case, it broke in Edwards' favor, at least for a while. The tabloids do get a lot of things wrong also. Just because it appeared in the National Enquirer, that doesn't mean that NBC and the New York Times should have been running it, right?
I think to his stance, with the strong family values sort of pushed this against him too, that you could say maybe it wasn't that newsworthy had he had a different campaign strategy. But since that was so much the central point of his...
Salim Muakil is our liberal tonight. Salim, we've talked about this issue. It pops up every couple of years, certainly every 4 years. There's an issue like this that comes up on both sides of the aisle. But in this particular case, is John Edwards one of the phoniest of phonies? Because not only was this a fact of life that he kept from the public, he kept it from his supporters. And in this particular case, he was getting added sympathy because of his wife's battle with cancer, which seems to be reprehensible conduct, that he does this, with her in that condition.
I don't think he's any phonier than most males who seek success so they can have access to the gene pool. I mean, that's why we try to be successful and seek status, to be the alpha dog, so that we can have access to females. I realize that will probably provoke a lot of calls, but I think we make too much of this, these kinds of incidents. But of course, we're in this environment, and so I think John Edwards was really irresponsible because he knew that this would break. and he was putting the Democratic Party in an untenable position.
No, but he didn't think this was going to break. I mean, one of the things that flabbergasts me about this story is that he and Elizabeth Edwards knew about this story before they decided to run for president. And I've heard from numerous people, she was the one that kept pushing him to run. People wondered why he would run for president when his wife was diagnosed with cancer. He decided to do it, and both of them knew about it. This is one of the great frauds on anyone that sent a dollar or a dime to the John Edwards campaign. They've got to be beside themselves tonight because of the hypocrisy here.
Well, I think that's what makes the story a larger story. I think it gets to the point that you made. I mean, the sanctimonious nature of this candidacy sort of contributes to the phoniness of this whole situation. And it's what we were talking about before we went on the air, the idea that if you're a campaign contributor to John Edwards, and now you find out that over $100,000 of those contributions were going to this his mistress in order to, I don't know if it was to keep her quiet or what, but, you know, I mean, there's just so...
Make videos.
Right, well, allegedly make videos, right? But, I mean, I think that's what makes this story, I think, a little bit of a bigger story. It's not just your kind of garden variety sex scandal. I mean, I think it really exposes the hypocrisy of this candidacy and this candidate. And, you know, you mentioned that the situation of his wife. I mean, when you the rationalization, even in the apology, where he says, well, Edward said, well, you know, I wasn't having the affair while my wife was diagnosed with cancer. It was only when she was clear. I mean, some of the statements and some of the things that are that he said, it really exposes, I think, his character as one that probably is not the kind of person we want in the White House.
This is what he had to say, quote, in 2006, I made a serious error in judgment and conducted myself in a way that was disloyal to my family and to my core beliefs. I recognized my mistake and I told my wife that I had a liaison with another woman and I asked for her forgiveness. Although I was honest in every painful detail with my family, I did not tell the public. I was and am ashamed of my conduct and choices. With my family, I took responsibility for my actions in 2006, and today I will take full responsibility publicly, and that was John Edwards. You know, one of his strongest supporters was John Bonnier. John Bonnier said when he learned about this, he was very upset. He was his campaign manager. This was, you know, the guy that was out there on all the shows speaking up for John Edwards. He said, quote, thousands of friends of the senators and his supporters have put their faith and confidence in him, and he's let them down. They've been betrayed by his action. When asked if John Edwards has a political future, he said, you can't lie in politics and expect to have people's confidence. Again, this guy is deader than a doornail politically. Would you acknowledge that?
Yes. I also would say, though, sometimes when we have the things like the Justice Department scandals over the people that were put in like political hacks, I'd like to see the same nuanced investigation and the same, you know, going to who put these people in and having the same, you know, spotlight put on them, because we sort of see them, you know, in the press and then they pass away like, oh, you know, that they weren't connected.
Well, this is a guy, you know,
it's
again,
as much of a moral scandal.
Part of the rumors were, what not only was he on, I never believed that he was on Obama's list for vice president, but again, you know, there had been discussion as to whether or not he'd end up as the Attorney General of the United States. Again, reckless. One of the most reckless politicians of the last 20 years. 1-800-723-8289 if you want to offer your opinion. I'm Bruce Dumont, live from Chicago.
You've heard the horror stories about meth. It's a powerful, dangerous, and highly addictive drug that's having a serious impact on our communities and horrible effects on families across the country. But there is reason for hope. Treatment for meth addiction is available, and it works. All it takes is someone to care. If you know someone using meth, get involved and help them get on the path to recovery. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit GoRedForWomen.org.
Go Red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go Red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go Red.
To Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
From Grand Rapids, Michigan to Salisbury, North Carolina, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Want to get reaction to the story we began our discussion with this evening, and that is the John Edwards story. We will be talking about other things. We're not doing the whole show on this subject, but we're going to take a segment on this. Let's go to Woodridge, Illinois, where Tom is listening to us on our flagship WLS. Go ahead.
Thank you, Bruce. Excellent program, as usual. In 1969, John McCain's first wife, Carol, was seriously injured in an automobile accident. When John McCain got out of captivity in North Vietnam, he came home and was appalled by his first wife's physical condition. He dumped her unceremoniously.
Sir, what is your source for that particular comment?
John McCain's autobiography. He said he behaved shamelessly, and he's very sorry he treated his first wife in such an unseemly fashion. But I think it's rather questionable when these Democrats are constantly challenged about their personal life. Nobody ever discusses John McCain's personal life, which is rather messy.
You know, I think you bring up an interesting point. We did discuss this tangentially a couple of weeks ago on this program, because I think it does bring up it brings up the subject of the personal lives and how much of the background of a candidate do we want to know. And then the question which we asked in segment number one, and that is, does the mainstream media, how aggressive are they in pursuing these stories?
Well,
Barbara, I want to get Barbara Iverson a chance to respond, because not only is she a woman, obviously, but she's also a professor, and she teaches things like new media, and she's offered her opinions on how proctoscopic, if you will, the media should be in looking into a candidate's, you know, background, moral background.
Yes.
Well, in this case with the family thing, it probably cuts more to Edwards than in other cases. But I think, again, we now have more, Americans have more confidence in postal employees than they do in Justice Department employees. So
but
there should be investigations.
I think Tom's point is this. Does the Edwards story set in motion a discussion of John McCain's first marriage and how it ended?
Well, I think that's why Edwards' story has so much resonance, is because of John McCain's previous marriage and the way he treated his wife. I think that was in the media. I mean, I've read it.
Right, I have too.
And I think that that's why it's like a compliment to McCain's story.
But I think it's also a different situation. I mean, you have to remember that McCain is the one that came forward on his own to talk about that situation. I mean, he brought it forth and talked about it publicly. John Edwards sat around waiting to get caught, and then, you know, sheepishly went into the background.
There were press reports of McCain's situation earlier, before the book came out, and I think he simply owned up to what was rumored.
But one of the things that Elizabeth Edwards said in response to this, because she issued her own statement, and one of the things that she said, this is in the wake of the John Edwards statement and then his appearance last Friday on Nightline on ABC. She said, "I am proud of the courage John showed by his honesty in the face of shame," end of quote. Where's the honesty? He got caught. He got caught. There was no way he could get away with it. Is that the only way you're going to be honest?
Well, I mean, I agree. And I think, you know, before we went to break, you read his statement. And his statement to me sounded like someone who wasn't ashamed of his conduct. He was just ashamed that he got caught. And, you know, I think that's what's so disappointing about this whole thing. I think we were talking also about the New York Times, Maureen Downs column, talking about his narcissistic quality and his narcissistic character. I mean, I think it exposes the character of a man who was trying to become the president of the United States. I think that's why it has a lot of resonance.
He talked about, here I was a senator, and then I was elected, and then I ran for vice president, and I ran for president. He was talking about getting wrapped up in this thing. I mean, anyone that watched any of the, listened to any of the late night comics, they were talking about his narcissism and his hair and all. That was the butt of his jokes. Yeah. That's how he was perceived, at least in a comedic way.
But we have this public hypocrisy in America. I mean, I wonder how many of us and how many people in America could say in their heart of hearts that they had never transgressed against their significant other or, you know, committed adultery.
And I don't think that's the issue here. Here is a guy who wants to be the leader of the free world, and he and his conniving wife, and I'm going to say that, you know, I feel sorry for the woman because she has cancer. I can certainly empathize with women who have cancer. But you know what? She and John Edwards are connivers. They manipulated. They knew the story. They went and they asked for money. They went out and asked people for money to run for the presidency because they wanted it. They thought they were going to get away with it.
Maybe they thought the American people would mature before.
They're too stupid to be in the White House.
Perhaps that's the case.
They're too stupid to be in the White House.
We have a presidential tradition too. I mean, you look at Harding; he had a powerful wife who pushed him around, and when Woodrow Wilson had his stroke, his wife was basically president. So
I'm not saying this isn't bipartisan. That's not my argument. My point in this case is this. This is very reckless behavior. Let's take a call. Let's go to John in Myrtle Beach, listening to us on WRNN. Nice to hear from South Carolina tonight.
Well, it's nice to hear you guys. I'm really had myself fit to be tired with this conversation about Edwards, and I almost feel like that Edwards is a smokescreen for the DNC just to get everybody off of the what's his name. But anyway, my point was that. We've allowed Clinton to we've basically given him a green light on being a politician again, and his antics were as bad or worse than anything ever John Edwards ever did, I think. But I mean, it's just like Edwards was a slime bag, I guess you might say. But we wouldn't have never known about it if he hadn't owned up to it. But Clinton's here.
We would have known about it. If you're a reader of the National Enquirer, which is one of the, it is one of the major publications in the country insofar as circulation. Millions of people knew about it. But again, it didn't get into the political, chattering social classes where they talked about it at fashionable parties until it made its way into the mainstream media and on Nightline and everything else. And now everybody talks about it. And by the way, in this particular case, I think it's almost worse because certainly when the Clinton story broke, and again, what Bill Clinton did in the White House, I think was reprehensible. But the point is that John Edwards criticized. He was unmerciful in his criticism of Bill Clinton at the time. Again, further hypocrisy. But in this particular case, they knew it from the get-go. They went and asked people for money to promote a campaign because they lusted for the White House, and they had to be stupid if they didn't think it was ultimately going to come out. Because, the reality right now, John Edwards could be 2 weeks away from the opening of the convention. What would that have done to the millions of people who would have voted for him that would have put him in that position? That's how much their own individual, call it his narcissism, call about it their Machiavellian thinking. Again, good riddance for both of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we're gonna move on. Let's go to somebody else. Let's go to Bob in Woodridge, Illinois. You're on WLS.
I think you're spot on in terms of the conversation. I think it's going to be quickly yesterday's news. I think it's very similar to the Elliott Spitzer situation in New York. And here you have the president governor in New York had the same type of situation, had an affair, but he admitted it, and people said, well, that's fine. I think Edwards, is yesterday's news at this point in time, and we have a lot bigger things to focus on. And
maybe they should put them all. Maybe they should let them all speak on Wednesday night. Put McGreevy up there. Put Spitzer up there. Put Edwards. It'll be adultery night at the Democratic convention.
That would be awesome.
And then the Republicans can have one at their convention in Minneapolis too. Put Larry Craig up there and Rudy Giuliani.
Symbolic toilet.
I think it's interesting because
Fred
it's
Thompson.
It's a comment that arrogance eventually gets washed out of the system, and I've heard some of the comedians joke about it that you don't see this on the Republican side because they're too boring to have sex, and it's just a Democratic phenomenon. But I arrogance gets washed out of the system, and I think you spot on, Barbara. I appreciate your comment, and Bruce, thanks so much.
All right, thanks very much. Let's go to Susie, listening to us in is it Seguin, Texas, on KLBJ?
It's Seguin, Texas.
Okay, very good. Nice to hear you.
Thank you. I've got two comments to make. My first comment is that Barack Obama has not, as yet, been guilty, as far as we know, of any type of infidelities with his wife. But John McCain has, and others. And my feeling is that I don't really think that I want somebody in the White House who's done that. Okay, I didn't like Clinton doing it. We've never let Clinton rest on that one. So why should we give McCain a pass? That's question one. Okay, then the question two.
Who would you pick then? Who would you pick?
Who would I pick?
Yeah, I mean of those that are running this you know, I guess, you know, Ralph Nader would fit the bill. He hasn't cheated on his wife because he's not married.
Ralph Nader has a lot of good things to say, but Ralph Nader can't get elected.
Okay, but in your particular point, though, you're saying, I mean, in this particular case, you're making the case for Obama.
I'm making the case in that regard, yeah. That, I mean, so far as character goes, besides what the right wing has tried to label him with, he seems like a pretty nice guy. He seems like a pretty upstanding guy. And he seems to have a good family life. He has the kind of life that I think most of us as Americans appreciate, you know. And all I've seen is denigration of him. There's been very little said about McCain and his affair with his current wife while he was married to the wife who was crippled in the car wreck.
Well, I predict we will be hearing a lot more about that, and also we're going to head to break because we're going to be talking about some other issues in a few moments. I think the other thing politically is I think this story will help and move forward the vice presidential likelihood of Evan Bayh of Indiana. I think Evan Bayh as the vice presidential running mate with Barack Obama is the image of two families, one black, one white. That's what Obama wants the American people to look at. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415. From Boise, Idaho to Fayetteville, North Carolina, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Salim Muwakkil is here. He is the senior editor of In These Times, one of the country's leading progressive periodicals, longtime friend of Barack Obama, and a talk show host every Saturday night on WVON, one of the country's leading African-American talk stations. Also with us this evening is John McGovern. And John McGovern is a Republican consultant and for many, many years was a political advisor and a media spokesman for House Speaker Dennis Hastert. And also joining us this evening is Art Sear. He's the A.W. Clawson Professor at Carthage College in Kenosha, Wisconsin. And also with us this evening is Barbara Iverson. And Barbara Iverson is on the faculty of Columbia College in Chicago, and that is one of the leading media schools in the country, where she teaches courses in online publishing and new media, and also is with the blog chicagotalks.org and is involved in citizen journalism. And you keep your ears on blogs and everything of that nature. And speaking of communication, we are announcing tonight, by the way, if you have pencil and paper, we'll repeat it a little bit later on the broadcast. We have a new email address effective tonight. It's BTB, just like Beyond the Beltway, BTB@museum.tv. BTB@museum.tv. It even rhymes. BTB@museum.tv, and that is our new email address for Beyond the Beltway. Well, we're going to shift gears from talking about John Edwards. We'll take more calls on that subject a little bit later on in the broadcast, but we also want to talk about something else that is perhaps certainly of greater substance insofar as world politics is concerned, and that is what is happening in Georgia and Russia, not the state of Georgia, the country of Russia. And Art Sear, we've invited you to join us because world affairs and the actions of the Soviet Union is near and dear to your heart. You've watched it for many, many years. Set the scene for us. What are the issues at stake in this Russia-Georgia battle, and what's all the fighting about at the moment?
Well, historically, whether it's Imperial Russia traditionally or the modern Soviet Union, there's been strong desire, to put it mildly, on the part of Moscow to have friendly states along their borders. That transcends the communist period and the current period. Georgia, along with Ukraine, are relatively independent states. Georgia, in particular, takes pride in the fact that they have a relatively open market economy. The Rose Revolution ushered in a strong, it's fair to say, and pretty durable democratic culture, despite the fact that the president did have briefly a state of emergency a little under a year ago. They have had reasonably fair elections. Georgia is also the home of Joseph Stalin, a figure who's much revered, believe it or not, in the contemporary Russian and wider former Soviet sphere. So there are lots of reasons why the two are in conflict. I have believed for some time that we've been making a mistake in pressing so strongly during the Bush administration for NATO membership on the part of Ukraine as well as Georgia. I think it effectively slaps Russia in the face and tends to stoke up the fires of their paranoia, which are always there. I do think we have an overriding interest in good and stable relations if we can manage them with Moscow. I think that should trump other considerations.
And Russia sent in 10,000 troops over the and they're battling over a separatist region within the area. Tell us more about that.
Abkhazia and South Ossetia are two breakaway sectors in the wider state of Georgia.
And if you look at the map, I mean, when you talk about Russia, tell us a little bit about the geography of the area.
Well, as you'll see from your good map, Georgia, in geopolitical terms, is in an extremely important position. It borders Turkey as well as Russia, two long historical adversaries. It also borders the Black Sea, which is a principle with the end of the Cold War. The Black Sea has become a principal and growing source of trade, including transporting petroleum and energy resources from Russia and the wider former Soviet Union to the West.
And since they broke away from Russia, what has been the relationship with Turkey to their south?
Well, Turkey has been fairly cautious. They don't want to have an open conflict with Russia And certainly don't want to complicate things any further with the Bush administration. I think it's fair to say that Turkey has been quite cautious, and quite rightly so. It's been a faithful ally of the United States. Putin, now prime minister, no longer president, but he's not at all shy about speaking out, as you know. Putin has been very explicit, as have other Russian leaders, that Georgia as a NATO ally is just unacceptable. They won't accept the presence of NATO on the borders of the Caucasus.
And insofar as the timing of this incident, is there anything unique about why this is breaking out now?
I don't think so. The we had a NATO conference within the last 9 months that underscored the importance, from Washington's point of view, of NATO membership for Georgia as well as Ukraine. There has been a Russian occupation force, a, quote, peacekeeping force, unquote, in Georgian territory for quite some time. I think it's not surprising that this has occurred given American foreign policy, which, as I've said, I think is misguided. A lot of people seem to have been taken by surprise by the intensity of the hostilities and the timing right now with the opening of the Olympics.
Now, 2,000 Georgian troops, Georgia was one of the countries that sent troops to help us in Iraq.
Yes, indeed.
Those troops, 2,000 of them, have been called back home.
Right.
To deal with the fighting back home. And what is the likelihood of any country having any influence over calming things down at the moment, other than sharp rhetoric? And is there a role for the United Nations to play here? Or,
oh, yes, indeed.
I mean, Russia has a veto vote in the Security Council, so can they block anything that's too punitive towards them?
Sure they can. At the same time, there's a whole web or network of organizations, including NATO, also the Organizations for Security and Cooperation in Europe, which is less controversial from a Russian point of view, the European Union. One of the great benefits of the great leaders we had during the Second World War and post-war period is we have this web of institutions, and I think all sides probably appreciate the importance of diplomacy, including the Russians. The Russian economy constantly does better than was predicted, partly because of their enormous oil and gas resources, partly because of outside capital that's willing to take a risk, but also because Putin and the other Russian leaders, including President Medvedev, his close partner, have been giving the highest priority to economic growth and development. I think economic growth will probably trump Russian nationalism in this case. I hope so, but there's lots of room for negotiation. I can't see where anybody has an interest in general war.
Now, Georgia's president has said they call for a unilateral ceasefire.
Yes.
They said, "We're not crazy," and claimed its troops were retreating Sunday after the disputed province of South Ossetia in the face of Russia's far superior firepower. But the Russians didn't stop, and over 2,000 Georgians have been killed thus far.
Yes.
Since Friday.
Right. Well, I always like to quote Eisenhower at times like this. As general as well as president, I used to say, any damn fool can start a war. It's the easiest thing in the world. Stopping any war is always a challenge, and he's, of course, the man who stopped the Korean War very quickly after becoming president. It's very hard to stop a war, including a war like this, but I have no, and I did review the news before coming in after you called me, Bruce, I see no evidence that the thing has gotten totally out of control.
Are there particular resources in that part of Georgia that they decided to go to that particular province?
I don't think it's a battle over natural resources. I'm not an expert on the geology or the geography of the region. So there's always a problem with the professor that he starts talking beyond, as you know, professor, beyond his expertise. But I don't think it's about natural resources.
Does this create a situation in a political campaign where obviously you have one candidate who is relatively young and inexperienced, and you have one who's been around a while? Mm-hmm. Is this one of these issues that could have some sway in the presidential election?
It could, depending on how it unfolds. Their statements have been emphasizing negotiation, however, and I think both are savvy enough that they'll keep from getting tripped up.
But there's been no statement. Have either of them made a statement that you have read that causes you any concern, or are they both pretty much
no
boilerplate responses to using diplomacy at this point?
Yes, I've been impressed by the emphasis on diplomacy, especially by Senator McCain.
Putin came home from the Olympics. George Bush is still there,
mm-hmm.
patting the volleyball players on the on the backside.
Well,
should he be demonstrating a greater sense of disgust at the actions of the Russians at this particular time?
President Bush?
Yes.
No, I think it's to his credit he's staying. It's very easy to criticize President Carter, who I think in many ways was a good president in foreign policy. Carter hurt us and hurt a lot of Olympic athletes by canceling our participation in an earlier Olympics after the Soviets invaded Afghanistan. I don't think the president should be doing anything to undercut the Olympics. I think President Bush deserves credit, especially as a Republican, for criticizing China rather bluntly on human rights shortcomings. I think that's appropriate. I don't think he should drop everything and leave the games. That would be counterproductive. I also don't want to monopolize the conversation here.
I want to get John your response.
Thank you for asking me, Bruce.
It's been handled.
Well, I think one thing that's interesting is what Art said at the beginning is sort of the history lesson of Russia and whether it's the Soviet Union or Imperial Russia is we look at what is going on with this I don't even know what you'd call it confrontation, I guess. I think that's where it becomes a bigger foreign policy issue. Is it's really not so much dealing with this specific incident. It's dealing with how are you going to deal with Russia as a nation as we move forward. You know, as Russia becomes, you know, wealthier, becomes more established in terms of. Obviously, it's a very well-established military power.
Well, this also sets quite a precedent. I mean, if the United States or the United Nations or the free world does not resolve this in some positive manner, I mean, this could be, why wouldn't the Ukraine be next? I want to get your reaction and everybody's reaction from that. I mean, is this the beginning of Russia retrenching and sort of restarting its march across Europe? 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont. Back shortly from Chicago with your calls.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
Thank you.
From Lebanon, Oregon, to New London, New Hampshire, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Two calls in just a moment, but I wanted to get Salim Muwakkil's response to my question about whether or not, whether or not this is maybe the beginning of, you know, Russia feeling its oats again. And if we don't handle this situation, when I say we, I mean the free world, if we don't handle this situation well, why not just keep marching into the Ukraine?
Yeah, well, I think that that's a question that really helps John McCain in many ways. He has been the one cautioning the U.S. About getting too close to Russia, and his foreign policy has emphasized a kind of a cautious approach. But as Art pointed out, he's also advocated, pushing for NATO membership for the Ukraine and Georgia. And I think that that is one of the reasons that Russia is so trigger happy, is because they sense that the U.S. is attempting to use the dissension to further their interests right on Russia's border. And that, you know, I don't think that's a useful foreign policy.
Well, you know, President Bush made one of his most infamous statements when he talked about looking in Putin's eyes and said, here, this is a guy I can trust, believe in. John McCain says that if he looks in those eyes, he just sees KGB.
Right.
Now, which is the rhetoric you want from the next president of the United States?
I think it's good if you can avoid personalizing diplomacy. And I myself am most comfortable with presidential candidates who talk about policy rather than good guy, bad guy scenarios. I'm not ducking your question.
What about the march, though? Again, if this is not handled properly, is this the beginning of a phase two of a Russian world, at least desire for domination?
No, I don't think so.
The comeback.
Right. No, I don't think so.
We're not on a comeback trail here.
Well, Russia historically has been a cautious power about using force beyond their borders, very different from German history.
And U.S. history, let us say.
Overheated rhetoric from Georgia, emanating from Saakashvili, among others, that this is 1939, I think is really not right and not accurate. And historically, we were talking off camera about Hungary in 56 as well as Czechoslovakia in 68. I'm not endorsing these kinds of crackdowns, but I think Russian insecurity is something we have to keep in mind.
And Barbara? The bully pulpit that we might have had has been so tarnished with our actions when we've acted unilaterally or forced other people, to come in on actions which are questionable, that we should have an administration that maybe steps back a little and looks at how we're seen and is a little more cautious and not just assuming that, hey, if we say this and we think it's right, it's totally right.
Marjorie in Chicago, go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay, hi. There is a pipeline that goes through Georgia that Russian fighter jets had tried to bomb that carries oil from Asia to Europe and to the Middle East. And the Germans tried to get into Georgia during the Second World War because of oil. And I think that's got one of the reasons to do with why Russia's down there.
Art, I think that's an important point. I don't think that it's natural resources are paramount in this case. There are alternative routes into Western Europe. Global demand is growing greatly. The Russians are making a lot of money from their oil exports in the current status quo, and a war threatens that. It's a very good point about pipelines. I don't think it's principled to Russian calculations.
But what's unique about Ossetia then, South Ossetia? Why is that the focal point here, Art?
Well, the lady referred to history in terms of German incursion. Both Georgia and especially Ukraine have been historically a lot of affinity for Germany, and during the Nazi period, the Wehrmacht recruited a very, very famous, notorious division from the Ukraine. Stalin went out of his way to be vengeful towards those few who survived.
But now in Ossetia, where the focus of this fighting is going on, what is so special about that?
Well, there's strong breakaway sentiment, as I understand it, in both Abkhazia and Ossetia.
So they want to be their own country.
Yes. That's why the Russians sent in occupation troops. There's also Transnistria, lest we forget, a breakaway sector of Moldova, which has been making more and more noise about independence. I think Moscow is concerned about an unraveling situation as in the former Soviet Union.
Are any of these areas that have some old Soviet Union nuclear weapons? Because we've heard about the stockpile of what happened to all the Soviet nuclear weapons during the great buildup period. Are any of those in these regions that are now the part of this fighting?
I'm not sure. I think there may be some still stationed in Georgia.
Certainly in Ukraine.
Yeah.
In the Ukraine.
Right.
Yeah. So that is the big potential fear. If this thing, is there any reason why the Ukraine would want to side with the Georgians? I mean, being a former Soviet state, is there any camaraderie that exists between them that would want them to join together to fight back against Russia?
No, I don't think so.
I've heard in the news reports that Ukraine has made some allying statements, supporting Georgia in this particular case, and there's some fear that they may offer some assistance.
As this story moves forward, Barbara, just to a quick 30-second response. I mean, if this story emerges and continues to grow as a story, does this play to the perhaps advantage of John McCain, given the experience issue?
I think there's a lot of people that would say his experience and his tendency to go warlike would not bode well for him, but I'm sure that there's certainly a strong contingent of people that think we should always go with the military first.
Well, I don't think that's what John McCain has said. I mean, I think John McCain is, as Art pointed out, has been very vocal about his desire to see some sort of negotiation rather than military action. And I think, but to get to your point, Bruce, this is the kind of thing that people, when people see these situations, it makes them think about who has the qualifications and the experience to deal with tough foreign policy issues.
On that note, we have to say farewell to our panel for this hour. We'll be back for another full hour for those watching us or listening to us on radio. If you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week. Remember, our new email address, btb@museum.tv. I'm Bruce Dumont. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go Red!
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go Red!
To Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
My name is Teresa. I was a good mother. Then I tried meth and quickly became addicted. I abandoned my little girl to chase my next high. 8 months later, my daughter begged me to come home. Her plea made me enter drug treatment. My recovery wasn't easy, but I've been clean for 4 years now.
Meth is a powerful drug that affects everyone. If you know someone who's using, get involved. Treatment is available and it works. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics. Continuing in hour number two with our special guest this evening, conservative John McGovern, liberal Salim Muakil, Art Sear of Carthage College, and Barbara Iverson of Columbia College in Chicago. Our phone lines open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. Again, a reminder, we mentioned it in hour number one. We have a new email address, BTB, like Beyond the Beltway, BTB@museum.tv. BTB@museum.tv. That's if you want to get in touch with us. And again, I want to thank everybody back in the folks in beautiful in Grand Rapids, Wood Radio, and Michael Braemeyer and the programming executives there that made our visit last week to Grand Rapids a very enjoyable trip. It was the first day of my vacation around Lake Michigan. Took the trip way up north, went up to Curtis, Michigan, and Charlevoix and Traverse City, and then back down through Door County on the Wisconsin side. Again, beautiful weather in Egg Harbor and Fish Creek and all the great places in Door County. Good eating and perfect weather. Great place to go if you're. It's always great to be someplace in August, especially if you don't like heat. I am not a beach person, as you probably can tell. And being able to go north and have beautiful weather in the 70s and low 80s, it was really a beautiful part of the country. Talking about beautiful parts of the country and beautiful parts of the world, I want to spend a segment here before we go back to our calls. I want to get everybody's reaction to what we have seen thus far from the Olympics. Specifically, the opening celebration, which had to knock anyone's socks off. It really clearly was a stupendous production of just, I don't know how any country, any city outdoes that, given the magnitude of what they presented. And I guess my question is, not only with that presentation, but also with some of the political or some of the commentary, the sports commentary, and somewhat political commentary as well, that is followed on the networks. What's the impression? Again, it's very brief, it's very quick, but is there a pro-Chinese message that's coming out in these games that have a political significance in any way, Barbara?
I have to say that I haven't personally watched the spectacle yet, and it's not a personal interest.
It hasn't grabbed you.
No. I don't know.
How come?
It seems most of the Olympics seem very commercial to me, and I'm bothered by like the drug scandals and the people that have Y chromosomes that are coming into the XY chromosome teams, and the things like the young gymnast. And so it just seems to really take away from me the whole thing of the amateur gymnast, and it ends up seeming to me to be a commercial spectacle, and I don't like it parading as a political.
John McGovern, you have been around political spectacle. I mean, you've never seen anything like opening night on Friday night, have you?
Well, I mean, I guess I'd have to say I sort of have contradictory opinions of it. Sure. I thought that the spectacle of it, I think the architecture, I think the birdcage, I think the grandeur of the presentation was incredible. However, I do think, as far as the media coverage, especially, I don't want to single out NBC, but they are the ones that are carrying it. there is a lot of media cheerleading, it seems to me, about how wonderful this is, how wonderful Beijing is, how great, you know, the Chinese are, how great the spectacle is. And it seems to me that there are things going on there that, whether it's some of the censorship of the media, whether it's some of the other issues that we would expect, although China told us that everything was going to be fine, but of course it doesn't quite always end up that way. I'm just a little surprised that that there isn't more talk about some of the contradictions, if you will, of the grandeur of the event, but also...
Well, that may be tied to the fact that General Electric, which owns NBC, is seems to be one of the major sponsors.
Well, I think that's probably...
You see a lot of those spots.
That's a point for me.
I think it's maybe a little conspiratorial, but I think it's just interesting that... you know, that there isn't more talk about some of these things. I'm surprised.
Art Sear, what do you think?
Well, reacting to that, that's why I said during the first hour, I think President Bush deserves credit for drawing attention to human rights abuses in China. That tends to be more a Democratic than a Republican preserve, given the nature of our parties. I think compared to much more dangerous and difficult times, the 36th Olympics in Berlin especially, but also during the height of the Cold War, when things were so much more highly politicized and it was us against them. I find this very refreshing. And by definition, an Olympics that works well is open with lots of fresh commentary, open commentary as well as fresh air. It's antithetical to dictatorship. And it shows the world is moving our way. It shows excuse me, I don't want to be too much of a Pollyanna.
No, but it seems to me there was such a focus on the grandeur, on all the people, the constant reminder of all the people, the hundreds of thousands that were waiting outside, the bird's nest, the military precision of even the entertainment. I mean, it was somewhat intimidating, was it not? Was it intimidating?
Yes, it was intimidating. Yes.
I think it was very intimidating. I mean, it was a constant reminder. Wait a minute, don't pick a fight with these folks. Not Indeed. That we should, but that was a clear message, at least of the opening ceremony.
Well, one of the messages. The other message,
you know, we can beat them at basketball. We know that.
Well, we just found that out today. I think what John is saying, you know, this sponsorship of General Electric and the kind of the underlying capitalist motive is really, in some ways, a comic paradox, because we had this the largest of all communist countries putting on this display, and one of the largest capitalist corporations, General Electric, is really cheerleading in many ways, and it's really an interesting spectacle. In addition to the,
there
to
wasn't
the
a lot of coverage on the event about that they had to close down 250 plants because of the smog.
And they said,
I would have loved to have seen that fireworks display in person.
Yeah,
but can you imagine? What that did to the environment.
You know, here in Chicago today, in the Tribune, there was a story about the air quality here with the 2016 games. I mean, it seems to be there's a lot of punches being pulled, I guess. And to Salim's point, I mean, I don't have a problem with the capitalism aspect of it. I think that's good for China. I think having an active capitalist presence there is going to help. But this is a very small thing. We were talking about this off the air, too. When I saw the goose-stepping guards with the Olympic flag marching to raise... I mean, that bothered me. I mean, that had shades of, Berlin 36 or something. I think they're sending a very contradictory message. One is that we want capitalists, we want investment, we want people here, but at the same time, for your point, Bruce, I think it's coming across very clear that also we're people that you don't want to mess with.
They had workers that built the stadium and were there for several years building the new Beijing, who then were promptly told they had to leave and they couldn't have tickets even for one, event. And that doesn't seem fair to me.
Do you think it's going to be any different if Chicago gets it? I got to tell you, the little people, they're not going to get anywhere near. If Chicago gets it,
I don't see
the little people will get nowhere near those. They'll get as close as they did to the World Cup. Our phone number, 1-800-723-8029. Lots of callers on the line talking about John Edwards, talking about Russia. If you're on the line, I may ask you a question or two about the Olympics. If you watched the opening ceremony, and were you intimidated in any way by what you saw, the precision, the majesty, if you will, of that opening presentation? I'm Bruce Dumont, live from Chicago.
You've heard the horror stories about meth. It's a powerful, dangerous, and highly addictive drug that's having a serious impact on our communities and horrible effects on families across the country. but there is reason for hope. Treatment for meth addiction is available, and it works. All it takes is someone to care. If you know someone using meth, get involved and help them get on the path to recovery. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go red.
To Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
From Kenosha, Wisconsin to Cucamonga, California, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Lots of callers on the line. We've talked about a variety of things this evening. Let's reach out to Charles, listening to us in New York City, listening to us on XM Radio every Sunday night on POTUS 130. Nice to hear from you tonight, Charles. Go ahead.
Hi. I was going to ask you a question about Evan Bayh in reaction to something you said, but before I mention that, while I was sitting here on hold, a little bit of news came down the pipe, which I figured is relevant. You might want to know.
Sure.
David Plouffe, the campaign manager of Barack Obama, just sent out an email, and the first sentence of the email goes as follows. Barack Obama is about to make one of the most important decisions of this campaign, choosing a running mate. And then the letter goes on to indicate that if you sign up, you will be the first to know. They'll send down an email now. This could be just some sort of routine thing, or it might indicate that a decision is imminent, but I figured you folks might want to know.
Very good. I appreciate it. Yes. You've signed up for it, and I'm going to go when I get home. I'm going to sign up for it, too.
Just so you know, it was sent out in the last 30 minutes.
Well, actually, what I can tell you is probably they were waiting for my official endorsement of Evan Bayh.
Yes.
And that's because you there was a juxtaposition in your reference to that, was there not,
yes,
Charles?
Yes, and that leads me very neatly into the following. You had mentioned that with the troubles of John Edwards, that strengthens the case for Evan Bayh because he's got this wonderful family image. And I was wondering why you felt that Bayh's family image was any better than, for example, Tim Kaine, who happens to be my choice, but he could be anybody. I'm not clear why Bayh is particularly stronger in that area than the other finalists.
I think, whether or not he would be any stronger, you know, I don't know, but let me add it to several other pieces of information. I think I agree with you. I think Kane would be a strong candidate as well. But I think, and I've this is not necessarily an original thought. I've heard a reference to it over the last couple of weeks. Is that that one thing that I've heard is they want someone that Barack Obama is comfortable with, who is not going to be upstage him, or frankly challenge him too much. They wanted somebody with national security experience. And he has been on the Foreign Relations Committee. He's been on Intelligence Committee. And also, and this is very important, if it was somebody who was from a state that you could likely carry, and obviously Virginia is a state they think they can carry, most people would suggest that Indiana, which is a very Republican state, conceivably could go for Barack Obama if that were the case. So that's a takeaway state. Especially when you factor in the close relationship and at least the very positive things that Barack Obama has said about Richard Lugar, who's been the senator there, I think, for close to 40 years. So I think that's another reason, a plus for Indiana. You have the Chicago market, which reaches into northwest Indiana, which would help with a large African-American base in that state. It would help you with the rural vote with buy. And the other piece is that if you were to call up Central Casting and say, you know, send me the quintessential beautiful American family, they would probably send you the Bai family. I mean, it's a beautiful family, and the combination of a beautiful Barack Obama family and a beautiful Evan Bai family, the combination of those two families together.
But Bruce,
it looks great, it plays well, and that's why I think that Evan Bai would be a strong candidate for vice president.
May I make the case against?
You can. I'll let you make it, and then let's let John McCain, let's let John McGovern.
Johnny Mac.
All Irish.
Johnny Mac.
Well, I was just going
to
say.
Then we'll go to you, Charles. Here's John.
You know, I think you have to be careful, Bruce, about up till a week ago, Central Casting could have sent you John Edwards, too. So, you know, I
not
think
me.
It's Central Casting. But, you know, I think the point about the foreign policy experience and the fact that we just spent a good portion of this show talking about what's going on in Russia and Georgia, you know, I think there's a lot of concern about Barack Obama's experience and ability to manage foreign affairs. And certainly I think that's a big weakness, especially when you have these kind of things happening around the world. And I think that's probably what would lend you know, support to the Bai candidacy the strongest. So I think that's a very big challenge for that campaign.
And I like Joe Biden too, but I think Joe Biden may be a little bit too old. Mm-hmm. But now, Charles, back to you. It's your dime.
You got it. Evan Bai, the problems. First of all, in general, I think if you're looking for somebody to balance foreign policy experience as opposed to somebody balancing executive experience or something like that, it's going to be tough to find somebody who didn't have his fingerprints on the war in Iraq. And Evan Bai didn't just have his fingerprints on that. He voted for it in 2002, and then to add insult to injury, he voted for the Kyle Lieberman Iran amendment last year, and then this year, he's the chief Senate sponsor of the Iran blockade bill, which is also making its way through the House, and which a lot of the folks like MoveOn.org and so on have gotten very exercised about.
Does it help you with the Jewish vote, Charles?
Does
that help you with the Jewish vote?
The Iran thing? I don't think, no, because if you take a look at the demographics in the most recent polls, Jews are going for Obama. I mean, they are. His position on Iran, that we need to talk to them directly without preconditions, it has not damaged him apparently significantly at all.
I've read that the percentages are slightly off by about 10 or 15%.
Yeah, I think some of the polling is showing that he may have a bit of a problem with the Jewish community.
Go ahead, finish up your point.
Oh, okay, fine. If you have a candidate whose cause was so predicated on his original opposition to the war in Iraq and also to his, quote, opposition to the mindset that brought us Iraq, unquote, it's going to send a discordant note if you have someone, not just someone who voted for it and then just said, oops, I made a mistake, but if you take someone who not only voted for it but who is still voting basically for the same agenda right through to this very day, I think that would be a problem. I think it would be a problem. And don't forget, yeah, go ahead.
No, I would just say we're going to move on. We have lots of calls. Thanks very much.
Oh, Sam Nunn, by the way, opposes Georgia's entrance to NATO, which is, I thought was kind of interesting.
And that's the country of Georgia, not the state of Georgia,
yes.
Which he also represented.
Meaning that's an argument. If Obama supports Georgia's membership, so maybe Nunn got you know, he wasn't a very high prospect anyway, but I think with this issue having exploded and Obama just having gone on record as saying, I support NATO, that's probably another nail in the coffin of Sam Nunn's vice presidential
hope. Give me 30 seconds. I'll give you 30 seconds more to talk about Governor Kaine.
Oh, Governor, thank you. As you may recall from a few weeks ago, I gave you a list of 10 criteria for the
Yep.
Yeah, well, Kaine fills 4 of them. Electoral, obviously, Virginia, because that's an important state that Obama can win. He has the executive experience, because he's a governor. He reinforces Obama's message of change and of a new generation, which I don't think Evan Bayh would do because of the fact that he's been part of the old mindset. And as a kind of bonus point, he had a religious pilgrimage of some sort in his youth to Honduras, and he speaks fluent Spanish. So you not only can use
that's
him in Virginia, North Carolina.
That is a plus. I didn't mean to cut you off, but we are moving on to Bert in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Listen to us on KELO. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi. How are things in South Dakota?
Well, not too bad today. Real nice.
Good. Nice to hear from you.
Yeah, I've got a little problem with both candidates' energy problems.
Yeah.
Now, South Dakota, I live in South Dakota, Minnesota, Iowa. We love windmills out here. We got a lot of them going up. And I believe the solar energy is great. Now, here's one thing. Senator Obama says for the last 35 years we haven't had a domestic energy or oil policy. Well, he's true. That's true. But he has to blame Bill Clinton for an extra 2 million barrels a day that we've been losing for the last 10 years. Anwar.
Mm-hmm.
Production could have been in. We could have been producing up there in 3 years because everything was there except the drilling rigs. All right, now.
They also could have slowed down the growth of SUVs, which happened on the Clinton watch, but Al Gore was asleep at the switch at that point.
Well, that's true. That's true. But you look at it this way, another way. Obama says something about 9 billion gallons of biofuel within 8 years. That's 187,000 gallons a day, I think, if I had my figures right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, a barrel of oil produces something like 22 gallons of gasoline. Who's going to lose their jobs? Because I'm a truck driver. We need diesel fuel. I've been in the business for 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
When I started, it was 26 cents a gallon. Now it's $4.15 a gallon. We're the largest, most regulated industry in the country. As industry-wide, we haven't received a raise, cost-of-living raise, in 35 years.
So where do you go in November? You don't like either of these guys. Where do you go in November when you're going to the polling place?
I'm an independent. I don't like any of them, neither one of them.
Are you not going to vote?
I'm not sure yet, sir, but I don't think so. For the simple reason is, and both of them are coming up with this cap and trade. Now, that's going to immediately...
What about drilling offshore? What about drilling offshore? How important would that be? And how long would it would take years before we got too much oil out of that?
Well, true. It would take about 7 years. Now, here's one thing. Gas. Exxon or Shell.
You know what? On that note, sir, we're going to a break. I've got to say farewell to you. But listen, thanks very much. I think you got your quarter's worth. Nice to hear from South Dakota tonight. We've heard from New York, South Dakota. How about Tennessee? How about Indiana? How about Texas? You'll hear from them all when we roll on from the Prairie State, Chicago. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415 for a one-time professional fee. American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415. From Fresno, California to Frankfort, Kentucky, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight from coast to coast and border to border on many of America's great radio stations and XM satellite radio, POTUS 130. And if you haven't discovered that, that's a wonderful source for everything related to politics. 24 hours a day, POTUS 130 on XM Radio. And also joining us this evening, our liberal tonight is Salim Muwakkil. He is a senior editor of In These Times, one of the country's leading progressive periodicals. Art Sear is here. He is the head of the A.W. Clawson Center at Carthage College in beautiful Kenosha, Wisconsin. And also, he is a syndicated columnist on Scripps Howard, appearing in hundreds of newspapers all over the United States. Barbara Iverson joins us. She is a professor and a member of the faculty at Columbia College in Chicago, and she teaches new media and online publishing, and she has politics in her blood and has for many, many years, as has John McGovern. John McGovern is a Republican consultant and once upon a time was a key media consultant and advisor to a former House Speaker, Dennis Hastert. 1-800-723-8289. Again, a reminder, our new email address, btb@museum.tv. btb@museum.tv. We had the old one for about 15 years, so I want to remind everybody we're in a transition learning curve here. BTB at museum.tv. Speaking of Fresno, let's head there. Brad listens to this program, hopefully regularly, on KMJ, one of America's great radio stations. Brad, nice to hear from California tonight.
Hey, partner. Listen, my heart was starting to pump a little bit when I hear these people badmouth McCain about what he did in 69 to his former wife. There is no correlation at all between this and the Edwards thing. He wasn't running for president. He wasn't even running for dog catchers, for Christ's sakes. He spent 5.5, 6 years of living hell. And if any military families out there, that they know that a lot of times their marriage, they go bad because of the time being gone and coming right back and forth and everything. And it just gets me when they try to make a point, say, oh, look what McCain did. It's crap. It's absolute bull. And so these people, you know,
the one thing I would definitely agree with you on, sir, and that is, and it's something that you know, in this particular case, it's not about divorce, because as far as we know, there's no divorce being discussed or even contemplated in the Edwards case. But the one thing, no one should ever weigh in on a divorce. No one should ever weigh in on a divorce. Because in a divorce, there are two stories, and there are two sides. And usually, whoever is making the comment about it is speaking because they only know 50% of the story. So if a divorce is involved, there's all kinds of reasons. And by the way, I'd say the same thing about relations frequently with stepchildren. You know, there's some stepchildren who get along very well with their parents. There's others that don't. And I think it's pretty difficult for anyone to sit in judgment of that. My great concern with the John Edwards situation is you had two people. They knew what the story was. They knew what the facts were. They were in collusion with each other to defraud their supporters. They used that their little secret, and they went out and they raised money. They did it through the mail. They basically using the mail to defraud potential supporters.
And who believes that when Edwards say he doesn't know about where she got her money? Maybe some of his people did it, but I'll have to look into that. Who people out there wake up and smell the frigging coffee?
Yeah. This is one of the great trial lawyers of the country.
Yeah. Well, give me a break.
Brad, thanks very much. I'm glad we got your blood going, okay? Let's go to Elgin, Illinois. Fashionable South Elgin, to be exact. Jim is listening to us on WLS. You're on the air.
Thank you. It's a very beautiful, cozy spot along the Fox River that never floods because the Army Corps of Engineers put dams in there 40 years ago, and there hasn't been a flood since.
But terrific. That's good
story.
No, it's one great, but the environmentalists want to take it away. Anyways, the reporting or the non-reporting of the Edwards story until it couldn't be helped anymore is a clear reflection of how bad the media is in the tank for the Democrats. If Edwards had been Dick Cheney or one of the other veeps running for election before the elections came, it would have been splashed all over the media. And it's really a sad state of affairs that they're not consistently honest with both sides of the party.
John McGovern shaking his head.
Well, or if it had been John McCain, the New York Times would have put it on the front page with assorted, baseless accusations about his personal life.
I think that's why the Edwards story has so much resonance. It's because of that media symmetry. The media feels as if they may have overstepped or overemphasized McCain's problems, and so they're.
But my point is that story turned out to be false. I mean, everybody had egg on their face at the New York Times. I mean, and you know, here the Edwards thing is. Bruce was pointing out that the National Enquirer is, some in certain circles, people may not respect it, but it has a very large circulation, and frankly, they are right a lot of the time.
Yeah. And also, people are saying, well, you know, you're talking about this. The guy was having an extramarital affair. What's the case? In this particular case, she's an accomplice. I mean, I and the other thing that makes this case different to me is that he went around for every interview that he ever did when they talked about Elizabeth Edwards, and he would look in the camera and talk about how much he loved her and how much he was doing
all
this stuff.
He didn't still love her and still...
Oh, come on.
Bruce, come on.
I still say I wish the Inquirer had looked into the Ted Stevens money stuff a lot earlier. And
I
maybe,
do too.
You know, to me, those stories get short shrift compared to the sex stories. And while
Ted
sex
Stevens
cuts
should have
the
been gone 20 years
right,
ago, okay?
Right. And where was the media in that story? I mean, again, it would be better if they were investigating stories where it's hurting my pocketbook. The sex may be titillating, but I don't always see how that's going to, like, affect me when I need, you know, the environment to be clean, or I need a good policy. It's,
absolutely.
You know, it's like a distraction.
Well, it is a distraction in terms of the content of the story, but I think it does reveal very seriously questions about somebody's character who wants to run the country and wants to pass judgment and make decisions of all those things you talked about. And if you can't trust that person, and if they you know, have serious issues of honesty and character, I think that is a big story.
It would be so good to get back to the three branches of government, where we were not thinking that we were totally dependent on the imperial presidency, and that having someone with a character, even if it was partly flawed, if they were good at appointing people, and if our legislative branch worked better.
But people should be able to decide, you know, whether they want, whether they respect somebody's character or not. In this particular case, what nauseates me about this situation is that in all the stories, the way he used Elizabeth Edwards, he used his wife's cancer to get sympathy.
I'm not arguing with that, but I think that these other stories need to get as much attention.
That's a dastardly act.
Well, and it also raises...
This is not just, in my view, this is not just about adultery. This is about how you treat... And by the way, you know, for those... I mean, I lost my wife to cancer. I know what it's like to be the husband of a cancer victim. And you know what? Adultery is one thing. This is way beyond adultery. And in this particular case, the facts in this case clearly indicate that the two of them were in cahoots. They were in cahoots to use that sympathy so they could get votes because they lusted for the White House.
Well, I guess you could
and
say they're not
disgusting.
Going to be any divorce.
Pardon?
There won't be any divorce coming in the Edwards family then.
No, I don't think there will be because they're in cahoots. We got to move on. Let's go to Knoxville, Tennessee. Matthew is listening to us on WNOX. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Okay.
I've actually got a couple of different things. Number one, I'm actually relatively sure of why Russia is attacking Georgia. And this is just a stab in the dark. There actually happen to be three major oil pipelines, which are the only major oil pipelines that do not go through Iran or Russia. And they connect the Caspian Sea, the Black Sea, and then the Mediterranean Sea. Now, let me ask you, how... Do you begin to see here what is going on? And actually, if they could complete this before the Olympics are over, that would be a very intelligent move on their part. And if you, I mean, recently, because obviously it's made up of, I guess it's what, three breakout provinces, if I remember right?
Well, when you say complete, Matthew, what do you mean complete? If they could completely invade Georgia, is that what you mean?
Not necessarily completely invade Georgia, but it would be incredibly helpful to be as close to those pipelines as possible. I mean, if you are not a very large country, even though you have several large deposits of minerals within your country, would it not be advantageous to you to have control of possibly the one major pipeline that does not go through Iran and that does not go through your own country? And then also goes into the Black, the Caspian, and Mediterranean Sea.
Art, share any comment on that?
Well, your very useful map in the first hour, Bruce, showed the important geographic position of Georgia, so the caller's right about that. But there are lots of routes out of Central Asia into Western Europe and the global marketplace, and I don't think oil is the main reason to undertake something as disruptive and unpredictable as war in this case. I don't think they're driven mainly by oil because it's too unpredictable.
Which particular oil route are you talking about? I'm actually looking at the largest map and the most recently updated one of the oil routes out of the Asian region. I was just curious if you could help me out here.
Georgia,
are we talking about like the Kazakhstan-China oil pipeline, or are we talking about the proposed one that was coming out of China?
Georgia is an important oil route. I don't think oil is the principal reason why the Russians have been invading Georgia, because the downside risk is so great.
And again, for people that didn't hear, give us the principal reason in your view? Give us a 10-second answer here.
In my opinion, nationalist sentiment in breakaway provinces in Georgia. The Russians have had troops as a peacekeeping force there for some time because of pro-Russian sentiment in these breakaway provinces.
Okay, on that note, we have to say farewell. 1-800-723-8289. Farewell only for the segment. We got another 15 minutes coming up. Don't go away.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
From Austin, Texas to Bellingham, Washington, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Let's head to Houston, Texas. Samantha's listening to us on XM Radio tonight. Go ahead, Samantha.
Hi. I had a comment about Russia, but I'm going to start with a comment about this gentleman that called about John McCain and his wife and the divorce he had in 1969. If he feels that his blood is boiling, he should listen to Ross Perot, what he says about John McCain, because he knows John McCain way back when Ross Perot took care of his handicapped wife while McCain was in prison. And then when he came, he didn't want to have her and went and married instead Cindy McCain. And it was for his interest, economical interest. But that's his issue. I don't care. I don't judge him if he's going to be a good president
so
or
Ross
not.
Ross Perot's talking about this? I'll have to find out what Ross is up to.
He talked about it under the primaries even.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, but anyway, I'm calling about Russia and John McCain. I think it's very scary to just know that Russia started the invasion of the Republic of Georgia. and knowing that John McCain can be president, because John McCain, for me, how I see his foreign policy is, first, it's very outdated. He has way, way outdated policy. Secondly, the only thing I see in John McCain solving something is through the army, is war. That's the first thing he does before he goes to diplomacy. And I think that John McCain added to throw Russia out of the G8 and having, which he doesn't even have support of, no nation in the G8 support him, to throw Russia out of the G8. Still, he hasn't explained why and how he would do that.
Let's let John McGovern respond to what you've said about John McCain being, trigger happy and leads with his lip.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think you've been paying very close attention to his foreign policy proposals. I mean, we were talking about it earlier tonight on the Russian situation in Georgia. He has been very clear that he favors negotiation and diplomacy. He is not talking about sending troops.
Yeah, but this was to this particular. But John McCain has said that he wants to see Russia thrown out of the G8. And you know what? Henry Kissinger even said that, I do not support him on that, nothing. So John McCain is very provocative. I mean, he is basically more a dictator when it comes to foreign policy.
Well, I don't think he's a dictator. I think he may have policy positions that you don't agree with, but I'd be curious to know what you think Barack's Obama's positions are, because don't have any idea what he stands for.
I can tell you what his position is.
Samantha, hang on just a second. I'm putting in the conversation now. I'm bringing Edward into the conversation. He's from Chicago. He's talking to Samantha in Houston, Texas. Now, Edward, you see the qualifications of the two candidates completely different than Samantha. How do you see them?
Yeah, well, I think our president should be more aggressive. I don't want to use that bad word.
Belligerent. Bellicose.
Wimpy, that S word for wimp.
See, that's one of our problems, is that this whole aversion to looking like a wimp. We have this need to be macho, and I think that is like what Art is talking about, is provocative, and that's one of the reasons that Russia is so tense right now.
No, we don't want to be pushed around.
It's not about being pushed around.
Yeah, but you have the Chinese that sent that after Mr. Bush made a comment about China. They probably sent a person out to kill that American tourist. You're going to let people push you around. You got to hit them back.
You think that murder was deliberate?
Yes, I do.
Okay, well,
that's the
opinion.
Outdated outlook that Samantha's talking about. This notion that we have to be this macho king. I mean, that is an outdated understanding of foreign policy.
But it's not, in the sense that if you look at China, the discussion we're having about how they're projecting themselves through the Olympics, we talked about with Russia going into Georgia. You look at Iran. There are countries and there are governments in this world that will look for weakness, try to push us around if we don't stand up for our own self-interest.
Samantha, to you, go ahead. Final word, yes.
Yeah, when I say it's outdated. Because you see, the best foreign policy president that we've had is actually Father George Bush. He knew how to engage the world with us, which George Bush hasn't managed. And John McCain definitely won't manage, because if you think George Bush was bad, John McCain is a warmonger, period.
But what is your basis for saying that? I mean, you're just throwing out...
Neoconservatives he has advising you.
You're just throwing out these sort of charges.
No, I'm telling you, I supported the first George Bush, because his policy, he knew what he did engaging the world. You cannot fight it by yourself, definitely, when you're not the superpower anymore.
But I don't understand why you think...
You're borrowing money from China to fight a war.
I don't understand why you think John McCain doesn't have the experience or the ability to engage the world.
It's not about the experience. It's not about the experience. He is. That's the problem. He has too much experience.
That's why if these people are in charge again, there's going to be another 9/11.
You can't live under military. We don't have...
Say that again, Edward.
If these people are in charge again, that's why there's going to be another 9/11.
Because Samantha's in charge?
Him... Yeah, and then Salim will be the vice VP. Yeah.
It seems to me we made big headway with China under Nixon, with negotiation power, and that's probably...
But it's important to negotiate from a position of strength.
Only shining grace is that he negotiated with China.
There would not have been an opening ceremony last Friday night without Richard Nixon.
Absolutely right.
There should have been a moment of silence for him.
Negotiation, not militaristic.
There should have been a moment of silence for him. All the people making all the money at the Olympics, They should send some money to the Nixon Library, I got to tell you. And
good,
on that
good
note,
point,
everybody,
Bruce.
Well, it's true. Am I right?
Absolutely.
I mean, none of this, I was watching, I said, none of this would have happened, because I remembered sitting, watching in the middle of the night when Richard Nixon, you know, in 72, you know, went to China for the first time. It was very exciting. And again, what happened last Friday night and what's happening right now would have never happened.
The Chinese athletics paved the way for
the Chinese do celebrate.
On that note of pro-Nixon commentary, which you don't hear a lot of, You won't hear it much from me ever again.
You can write the rehabilitation book.
That's right. Our thanks this evening to John McGovern has been our conservative. Our liberal has been Salim Mowakil. Art Sear from Carthage College has been with us, as well as Barb Iverson from Columbia College. This program is a Genevieve production produced in association with WLS Talk Radio and Wilbur Entertainment. Our thanks to Tom Veracruz and Stephanie Lecce for the assistance of the production of this program. Until next Sunday night, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415 for a one-time professional fee. American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go red.
To go red for women and give your heart the love it deserves.
My name is Teresa. I was a good mother. Then I tried meth and quickly became addicted. I abandoned my little girl to chase my next high. 8 months later, my daughter begged me to come home. Her plea made me enter drug treatment. My recovery wasn't easy, but I've been clean for 4 years now.
Meth is a powerful drug that affects everyone. If you know someone who's using, get involved. Treatment is available and it works. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.